You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you, Dr. Lewis. I really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's not good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the wall, and I'd like to give the information. Ask me for the blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number two, and you are indeed listening to the Common Sense Show. I'm your host, Dave Hodges, and we are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. My thanks to Doug for that very interesting recapitulation of what he found this week. And boy, I tell you, I wish we had another hour to expand on that last topic we just did, but wow. Anyway, thanks to Doug. Make sure you stay with us in the third hour. Mike Adams is here, and the upcoming interview I did with Paul Preston, which is earth-shattering, is brought to you by Numana. Check out the storable food selection at numana.com/Hodges and use the coupon code HodgesNOV5 to take 5% off. And Todd, let's go ahead and roll that interview right now. Welcome back, and we're in the midst of our interview with Paul Preston. In the first hour of this interview, Paul detailed, and this is really good contextual history, the start to finish of Oroville Dam and the setup for what's coming, the forces that are at play, the politics that are involved, and the logistics of if the dam breaks. So we've got all that. And we've delved into the fact that Jerry Brown is a Jesuit deluxe, and he doesn't serve the Constitution of the United States. He serves the Constitution of this illegitimate Pope, being the Jesuit that he is. And, Paul, let's get right back into it. Let's pick it up where things have already been dicey. There's already been one evacuation back in February, thanks to the good sheriff, where he probably saved a couple hundred thousand lives. But let's get into now what's presently happening. We're talking about the Livermore Labs underneath the dam and the fact that there's nuclear weapons there. This is absolutely phenomenal. So let's go with that and let's pick it up right there.
Well, I had talked to, and you know, when I hear the term nuclear weapons, this is something like, I have to kind of give them some leeway because I do recall on the 12th when I was hearing this information about them at the time they were saying they brought in 31 trucks and they brought out nuclear weapons. And, you know, I do have a little bit of understanding about how some of these things work in terms of keeping things really underground. And of course, if you're under the Oroville Dam, which is 900 feet of rock and concrete, then I understand density, nuclear weapon. So from the science end of it, because I used to teach, you know, physical science and stuff, I got all that. So I really wasn't totally questioning what was going on there, other than the fact that this is all underground and deep and all that stuff. But then, of course, I just quickly shifted to the fact that this is a dam in distress and in failure mode, and they're taking out nuclear weapons. That was a concern, but it didn't really tie the knot until I started hearing from other people saying there were 31 trucks, and there were at least 62 of these devices that were there, and they weren't nuclear weapons. And then it quickly shifted to, well, what were they? But from there, it became into these ADMs, atomic demolition munitions, which are specifically designed to take down dams. And all of a sudden, hello, 9/11 conspiracy theory all day long.
Yeah.
I got that one. And so yeah, it was a matter of starting to put it all together and then understanding the dynamics of the facilities underneath the dam. And there's some lab facilities by Lawrence Livermore and by Berkeley and so on that are down there. Some of them were counting neutrinos, and we've heard other stories, and some of it I'm not going to talk about because it is really classified, some of it. I'm just not going to reveal that. But there is a great deal of stuff going on underneath the dam besides generating new, power from the water. And so when they started talking about a series of ADMs, I said to myself, gee, hello, ADMs, and the confluence of the water coming in at a certain time on February 12th. And then you have ADMs inside the dam. Then it was a very, very, very quick leap for me to realize that what Corey Honey had done by walking in, just literally, I mean, he says it. You can hear his own words in the YouTube that we produced. He just clearly walked in on as a lark, and basically, I think, interrupted their operation. And had he not walked in, they just would have let the dam fail, and the inundation would have just taken its own toll on perhaps 2.5 million people initially, killing hundreds of thousands of people within hours, maybe a million by daybreak, who knows. But the point is, that's a lot of people, plus that inundation would wipe out all that farming land for at least 5 to 10 years. That's serious famine. Then the water problem down in Southern California would be just huge. Millions of people would probably be at risk of life and death situations without water. So, gee, you think that might play big? And so I started to realize all those things all in one big package, and I said to myself, how can this just be a mistake? How can all these circumstances all come together at one time when you have ADMs that have been reported to me and reported to others? You have all these actions by the sheriff, which has been clearly indicated, clearly documented. You have the clear documentation. Listen, this is evidence that's out there. You don't have to say Paul Preston's a conspiracy theorist or not. Go ahead. I went through it with the Benghazi and all that other stuff. We're 100% right. We're 100% right here. But you take a look at the whole history of that dam, especially since Jerry Brown has become governor. It's been neglect after neglect after neglect. And it's purpose-driven. I have talked to dam experts, six of them. They've asked me not to put their name on, and I get it. I totally get it, and I'm not going to. And they all say there's something more at play here. This is not normal. The lack of inspections, the inspection process itself that has gone through there, the dam is still not licensed properly to even operate to this day. It has not been for 10 years licensed properly because of all the situations that I have described to you, ladies and gentlemen. And they are no closer today to getting it operationally licensed properly than they were 10 years ago. So there's got to be another problem here. And every single one of these experts that I've talked to, and Dave, this is the big, and this is the reason why we're on the show tonight. They agree with me, the tinfoil hat guy. listen, they're pinned down. They are pinned down. Some of them agonize with me. I spent yesterday and today on the phone with these guys. And this is not the kind of thing where they don't want to talk to you. They're eager to talk to you. It's almost like kumbaya, and they can't get over the fact that I'm right. And I've looked at, I'm not trying to brag or anything. And of course, my response to them was therapeutic. I said, I get it. I live this every day. I'm shocked that I'm right. And I don't want to be right. I don't want to be right. I don't want to be thinking.
Well, this is your home that's at risk. It goes. Your home's gone.
Everything. My life was gone on the 12th. Had Sheriff Honey not stepped in, I'd be dead tonight. No doubt about it. I'd be dead. I don't even know where I'd be. They probably might find my bones 100 years from now. That's the way it works in floods. So yeah, I have a vested stake in all this. But these people are saying to me, Dave, they agree with me. And one of them was saying to me, I don't know how I can even remotely possibly agree with you, because it goes so much against my nature, because you're a tinfoil hat conspiracist. Of course, I'm busting up right now, because we're always right about these things. And he says, but you're right. You're absolutely right, and people's lives are in danger. And I said, yeah. And it's not just now. I mean, but listen. Okay, the Hyatt power plant, it's unique. It was one of the most unique power plants at the time when this was devised in 1964 to 1968. It's underneath the dam. And the dam is an enormous structure. It's an enormous edifice. It's awesome. It is absolutely awesome to be up there. Since this situation developed, I've been up there, 19 times. From the journalist standpoint, you know, I've been thrown off and threatened. The last two times I was threatened. I was threatened with my life, which is interesting. And I ignored it. Of course, I've ignored it. And I've been up there. But to go up there and be in front of the dam, at the base of the dam, and look up at that huge stone edifice is absolutely enormous, a phenomenal scene. Absolutely phenomenal. This thing took years to build, and they used the river-washed rock. I know, for your listeners, say that 10 times. River-washed rock. Yeah, say that as fast as you can. But they, from the dredges, in other words, you see, you know, in Gold Rush, the, you know, what's his name, the Speed, he's got these two dredges that he uses. Well, that's what they used up here in this area to dredge gold out of the Feather River. And that accumulated a lot of rock. And the rock is scaled in three dimensions. There's small, medium, and large. Now, it's smooth rock, smooth stone, and they use that stone, you know, these three different grades, as they call it, to build the dam. And for various varying degrees, there's clay in there, there's also concrete as a core of the dam and so on. But it's a mixture of all that stuff, but it's mostly the rock. The interesting thing about the rock is it's not, quote, fractured rock. This is very important to understand, ladies and gentlemen. When you take a hammer and you smash the rock, it fractures. Hello. Well, you've got on one portion of the rock, it's smooth, and on the other, it's very, very porous and very, very rough. Well, had they built the dam with fractured rock, there'd be no question the dam's never going to come down, because what happens when you fracture those rocks and you get so much together, those fractured portions actually kind of act as Loctite to one another. And the dam is not in that situation. The dam is in a situation where rocks are gliding around one another. Now, the Grand Teton, or the Teton Dam, which, by the way, was made by Kiewit Corporation, which is the same company, Kiewit, which is fixing the spillway. Don't you find that odd?
Yeah.
But in 1976, the Teton Dam was built. It was a earthen dam. And upon its filling, it actually collapsed. The right abutment of the dam liquefied, and you got liquefaction of the soil, and it completely gave away, and it inundated 300 miles, killed 11 people, and wiped out ranching and farming for miles. And, of course, it was interesting that it was that Kiewit company that built that, which is now rebuilding the spillway in Oroville. They love demolitions. And Kiewit, as I understand, is what's been reported to me. It's not verified to me, but it is worth a note. So if anybody's out there listening can verify this, they were one of the corporations that I believe it's Massachusetts Electrical that had they're the ones who supplied demolitions. They had an office on the 84th floor of one of the twin trade towers in 2001. I don't know why that might be an issue right now.
This is crazy. I mean, and I already know why the mainstream media is not covering it, but why do you think more people in the independent media aren't picking up on this?
They live in the state of denial. Now, I don't know about you. I've never found the capital of that state, have you?
Yeah, it's called gross ignorance.
There it is, GI. It's called the GI track. GI.
And we all know where that ends up. Okay, gutter humor, back on point here. Okay, so tell me, where is this all headed, Paul?
I think initially what happened was that they planned to bring down the dam that night.
Yep.
And to create the catastrophic events that would have happened, killing hundreds of thousands of people, maybe a million people or more in California. The One World Order people would have been gleeful and delighted to show that climate change is happening, climate change is real, and this is a problem with climate change, and this is what brought down the Oroville Dam, so therefore we are all correct. Once again, proving the Pope's encyclical. Well, you know, that did not happen that night. And now, here is some tertiary evidence of importance for your listeners. It was Jerry Brown who failed to respond at all to the disaster that night on the 12th. Jerry Brown, I thought it was very odd. I mean, I knew there was a pending disaster. I'm John Q. Public. I go to the dam to see what's going on and assess it myself. Now, of course, I do the radio show, but I'm curious. I've been around the dam. I'm just a human being, but I take it upon myself. I drive to the top of the dam, and I go out there and look at the spillway and say to myself, holy moly, this is going to go down. And I report it on my radio. I'm doing the things I need to be doing because I'm doing the radio thing. I could be retired, guys. I mean, I could be up in Lake Tahoe and I can be doing all the things I want to do. You know, I don't need to be that. Well, I love doing what I'm doing and telling people what's going on. I could be doing all that. The point is that Jerry Brown does not come up on the 12th or the 13th. Jim Gallagher, the California Assembly member, he comes right up, right away. It's his district. Jim Nielsen comes right up, right away. Doug LaMalfa, a member of the House of Representatives, comes right up, right away. And they are seen in leadership positions taking charge of what's going on. I mean, they want to be with the public. Where's Jerry Brown? He's nowhere to be found. Listen, I get a call, and I'm calling out to Jerry Brown on the radio. I'm saying, Jerry, we got this crisis. I started on the 7th. We got this crisis. Jerry, where are you? He made no comment about the Oroville Dam from the 7th. Till when? The 14th. The 14th. 7 days. We're 7 days into the crisis. We've just evacuated 200-some-odd thousand people on the 12th. He has been saying nothing. Nothing. So I'm out there pounding on the table on the radio, and I'm saying, Jerry, where are you? Jerry Brown. I called Jerry Brown's office. I wanted comments from Jerry Brown. Nothing to be said. His people, they stopped taking my phone calls. His people said at one point in one of the emails, Mr. Brown has nothing to say about this at this time. What? A huge impending disaster. Don't you think he would be concerned about saving lives or at least have some sort of... Nothing. Heck, even Al Gore would have shown... I don't think that's really over the top. But you know what I'm saying? So I'm sitting here, now we're really... So I get a call. This is no joke. I get a call from one of my listeners out on Highway 99. And they said, hey, we just heard from Jerry Brown. I know you're really ragging on Jerry Brown. We don't know anything about him. I said, what do you mean? Well, I would look into my rearview mirror, and all of a sudden all these red lights going off and all that stuff. And this truck goes racing by me, and it says... A Governor of California, Office of Emergency Services. And I said, oh, we've heard from Jerry Brown? That was hours into the whole thing on the 12th. Hours. I said, so finally. But that wasn't Jerry Brown. That was just a representative from his office showing up at the dam. You guys are so totally out of touch. So he comes out on the 14th, 2 days after, and says, well, yeah, there's a situation at the dam. Kind of chides the press and kind of gives him his little latitude. He says, I have no plans to go out to the dam. I'm not going to go out to the dam. I'm going to let it up to professionals, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, of course, people around here are going, what? You're not going to go out to the dam? I mean, even because, you know, symbolism, visibility for a leader is important. Absolutely it is. So we fast forward now. We're well involved in detail. This will show you how he's been hiding. And, of course, I come out clamoring, saying Jerry Brown is hiding under his desk in Sacramento in the dark bowels of the Capitol. And where it's really dark and damp with all the rest of the cockroaches, that's where Jerry Brown's hiding. Now, to prove my point, let's fast forward to I think it was the 22nd of February. And I might be wrong. I'm going to check out my little calendar here. But Wednesday or whatever it was of February. I'm sorry to just bear with me here. February 22nd. The DWR appropriately starts to have press conferences on a daily basis starting on the 14th, right? So along comes, and I go to one of the press conferences, and I'm kind of checking it out, watching it on TV and all that good stuff. And so suddenly on the 21st, they announced no more press conferences. That's it. Nine yet, not a goodbye. That's it. And so everybody says, oh, really? Kind of abruptly. Because, you know, now you got all the big players there, Fox and CNN. And so they're all there. And so come Wednesday, the 22nd, there's not supposed to be a press conference. But guess what? Somebody doesn't get the memo. A reporter from one of the Chico stations doesn't get the memo that there's not going to be a press conference. So she goes to the press tent up there at the DWR office complex on Glen Boulevard. She goes in there and she goes, oh my goodness, guess what? I'm the only press person in here, and so is Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown shows up. He's there in the press tent. But it's not a press conference. It's just for Jerry Brown. So she comes in, and she starts to walk over to Jerry Brown, a young girl, and she wants it to get a story. So she walks up to Jerry Brown, and she's immediately confronted by somebody from the DWR. And she goes, well, excuse me. And he goes, no, you need to leave now. And he goes, I want to ask Jerry Brown a question. And the guy, his response was this. There's no Jerry Brown here. You don't see a Jerry Brown here. You need to leave now. Now, if that does not put a flamethrower onto conspiracy theorists around the world, I don't know what does. We got the tape. We played it many times on the show. Can you believe that? There's no Jerry Brown here.
No.
Just move along. I mean, it's right out of Karl Marx. It's just amazing. So Jerry Brown has had little or no connectivity to this whole thing, which, and of course, that raises suspicion in and of itself, it does, to be so distanced from such a thing.
Well, I think there's no question, but I think the most stunning thing that you've revealed to date were the existence of the AMDs. I believe you called them
ADMs.
ADM, okay. Atomic Detonation.
Demolition.
Yeah, okay. And what the hell were they going to do with this?
Well, that means you had, and it's a very good point. These are not something where you take, as one person was telling me today, actually, when I was talking to them, who's into this, who understands all this stuff. And it's amazing, you know, once this conversation started within certain circles, and I didn't promote this, I mean, but people just came forward who want to help and who want to get the news out. The citizen journalists that are out there, Dave, and you know them very well, want honesty and truth. And my heartfelt thanks to so many of them who have come on board and gotten into the chats and so on and said, this is what it's at. This is where it's at. This is how the cow ate the cabbage in terms of nuclear ADMs and the explanation. So that now all of a sudden I'm like an expert in it. And I'm not. I just have, you know, I'm just a person reporting what has been happening. But people have reported to me that these ADMs are specifically designed to first and foremost blow up dams. And they were telling me today that this isn't the kind of thing where you take the canisters and you put them on the side of the dams and you blow them up and all of a sudden, kaboom, you got a big hole and water rushes through it. That's not what they're there for. And so I further questioning, I said, well, okay. They said, we have to have compression. And I said, well, what's that about? Well, you have to have them really underneath or inside the dam itself. That's really the best placement for these things. I said, oh. I said, is the Hyatt power plant that place? And they said, well, the Hyatt power plant is, but the problem with the plant itself structurally is that it's surrounded by massive amounts of concrete. So if you take and detonate these weapons, they're not going to be as effective. And I said, well, what about the tube that connects from the outside to the inside on the western face of the dam into the power plant. And they said, that's a perfect place. And I said, is it also perfect because right above the tube, as you go straight up from the, to the surface of the dam on the western side, you find this big, huge green spot where the soil, where the rock is all completely saturated with water. And they said, that's exactly right. It's a perfect place for these ADMs because the dam itself is saturated with water, and with the nuclear explosions, it will liquefy, thus bringing down the entire dam.
Wow. So will it be acoustic vibrations that do it?
Well, you know, that's been an interesting thing, and Dave, you and I have talked about this, and I've had reports from people out there that there's vibrations that have been going on have been reported. In fact, there's been some illnesses that have been reported, not just to me, but to other people. In fact, there's been other people that have talked to me that have been pulled by people that live up and around what's called the Kelly Ridge of massive vibrations, which has caused headaches, nausea, and migraines, or migraines and nausea, and you know, very, very ill feelings for days for some of the people who live up there. These people called me after, you know, I was reported to me, and people said, well, you need to call Paul Preston. So they called me, and listening to the reports of these people, these are people that they know one another, but this is not something that can be discounted as part of the problem. They've tried to seek some sort of resolution with themselves and the Department of Water Resolutions, water resources, but they've been denied that, and they said, you know, just nothing to see here, move along. It's confidential. We can't talk about it. This is what's happening. So vibrations, yes, that's been a big deal down there, and we have yet to see what is responsible for that. Vibrations would, of course, shake apart a dam. And the vibration is at the top of this thing on the southern abutment of the dam have been so bad, like I said, it's vibrated houses literally like crazy up there.
I've heard that. I've gotten emails from people in the Kelly Ridge area, as I've told you.
Right.
And three people specifically mentioned, I think this is HAARP.
Right. Yeah. And I would agree with them on that. There's been long reports that I've been aware of for the last 5 years of HAARP activity in and around the dam. Now, this gets into the whole thing about what's going on with the Lawrence Livermore business and all that stuff, and I'm not really ready to come out with a lot of that stuff yet. And I would love to, but I want to be firm on what information we have about that. I mean, I want to be completely accurate. I don't want to be...
Well, let me just ask you this. Do you think the fact that they stored those weapons under the dam since the height of the Cold War, has the destruction of the dam, in your opinion, been planned for generations, or are those two facts just coincidental?
No, I think this is clearly planned for generations. This is generational planning. I don't think the weapons that's a really good question, and I'm really not at liberty or under, you know, I don't want to go out on a limb yet and say, but I do want to say this, that the weapons or the munitions that I have reported to me at this point in time are the ADMs. And those ADMs were brought in and then immediately exited out. Now, there's another report out there that there's a testing of nuclear weapons that's being done for decay purposes in the dam itself. I cannot go out and talk specifically about that because I don't have all the knowledge behind that story, although I have information from multiple sources that in fact has been happening. But I do know what is very, very obvious to me is that these ADMs were placed and were there and available. And now this is the big thing. They were put from what I was, and I refer to this tube, this access tube that goes from the outside underneath the dam, left dam abutment inside into the power plant. That tube is a perfect place for the strong compression that would be required for these nuclear devices to go off and thus raise the dam up and cause it to liquefy and then to actually fail altogether.
In my mind, Paul, I'm trying to wrap my thought processes around a nuclear explosion at the dam. I'm not so sure, and I'm just thinking out loud now. I'm not speaking as a scientist or anything authoritatively, but just thinking out loud, I don't know that that water would run downstream at that point in time if there were a nuclear explosion. I just kind of searching for the right words. In fact, let me tell you what's put me in this mindset. I'm sure you've heard that you go back into ancient India and you can find glass where there's sand, which is endemic of a nuclear explosion. And it's led people to believe that there has been a nuclear war on this planet in our ancient past. I don't know that I go that far and subscribe to that. But in terms of talking about how chemical properties change with a nuclear detonation, so let me just put it on you. Would this water still run downstream and do all the damage, or would, would it be contained there?
No, it would. No, no. This is, and you bring up a good point, so then it kind of gives us a good point to describe the anatomy of the dam itself, Oroville Dam. Oroville Dam is not just a wall that's set up by rock and concrete and stuff. It's a whole system. You have the emergency spillway system part of it. You have the main spillway part of it. You have the river outlet part of it, which is a big tube down at the, it actually was the original bypass tunnels for the dam when they were building it. And you have the Hyatt power plant. All those are ways in which you can drain water out of the dam. Then you have the dam wall. So, and you have the spillway head up there. So these are all parts of the system. Now, if I can sort of describe the picture to everybody, at the northern end, the far northern end of the dam is the emergency spillway. And that spillway arches into, at the very top of the dam, the head of the spillway, where you have these spillway gates. And the spillway gates, when the water reaches to a certain level, I think it's 834 feet or something, that when the water reaches a certain level, they open those gates and the water can come tumbling down the main spillway, which is a spillway of 3,000 feet that dumps into the Feather River. But right next to those main gates is, of course, the major dam. In that dam, from those spillway gates, runs 6,000 feet across a canyon to the other side. And now we're talking about an elevation at 900 feet above the river. So from that point, from 6,000 feet to 900 feet down, you have nothing but rock and clay and concrete that has built the dam. Now, what has happened, or what would happen in this scenario that I'm talking about, is that there would be a cascading effect. And this is what they stopped with Coryhone and that night. The cascading effect, which I think was orchestrated to run water over that spillway, started to happen, and the emergency spillway started to what's called overtop. The water just couldn't be stopped. It was just continuing to. And in fact, if you plug everything up in the dam and you allow water to just flow into the dam, what's going to happen is that water is going to come over the top of the dam. It's called overtopping, and that's a sign of dam failure, okay? So what was happening that night is because they thought that the fish habitat was more important than human habitat, they would run water over the emergency spillway. Well, that quickly went into failure mode. You had the main spillway, which was in failure mode because it had broken pieces of it downstream, but you also had in the Hyatt power plant and also down below at the bottom of the Feather River, you had this river valve that was never functional operational for about 30 years. So you had the Hyatt power plant, which has six generators. One of them was already inoperable and needing repair, hadn't been repaired in years. So you only had five of those that were venting water up. So when the emergency spillway went, you had failure mode one happening. Emergency spillway, the spillway was number two. That was failure mode. you have this green spot, which they can't really account for. That's another failure mode on the face of the dam. And then you had the power plant itself failing. So you had various parts of the dam in failure mode on the 12th. Had they lost the top part of the dam, then you would have lost the spillway gates. That's in failure. That's inundation failure mode right there. That would have carved a huge channel out from the gates, from the where the dam was located in the northern abutment, to the gates all the way down, which would have drained at least 50% of the water. Now, had you done that in conjunction with, once you got into failure mode of the main or the emergency spillway, and that water came cascading down, if you had detonated nuclear devices within the tube that's underneath the dam reaching into the Hyatt power plant, you would have lost the entire dam. You would have lost the entire dam, which would have killed 1 million people right up front. I mean, there's no getting around it. You would have lost the dam.
Do these nuclear weapons have the range of a typical nuke, you know?
No.
2 mile, or is it more of a strategic, localized nuke?
Well, these weapons, it's kind of interesting. They're not weapons. They're munitions. They're demolition munitions. And I don't know if I'm breaking national security secrets or whatever, but they have been around since the 1950s. And they were very extensively used in any place that we've had occupational forces. So in Japan, in Korea in particular, I'm sure that there's a lot of these operational things. One of the strategic interests that would be important to destroy in an enemy situation would be the dams. You have to think back about the dam busters and all that stuff. And, of course, what happened with the dam busters, remember that was a British attempt to bring in those bouncing bombs that would bounce across the water, hit the dam abutment of a concrete dam, and then drop down to a certain level, then explode, hoping to create this liquefaction of the cement and then cause a breach, which would cause a dam failure. With the case of the demolitions, or the munitions, demolition munitions, atomic ones, they're very low grade, they're 5 kilotons. They are designed to be set up to destroy large structures in a very short order, thus denying the enemy access to them. Specifically, they're designed to destroy dams. That's as it was told to me by somebody who used to handle them, that they're specifically designed to destroy dams. And I ran the scenario by them and said, sure. I mean, it was a matter of fact with them. Dave was a matter of fact with the person. Well, yeah, they just wanted to blow up the dam. I was like, well, okay.
You know what this puts me in the mindset of? Building 7 on 9/11.
Oh, it's clearly that. It's clearly that. No, this was West Coast 9/11. But Corey Honey, the sheriff, stopped it. Just by chance, he stopped it. And it caught them with their pants down. That's the thing about this. It caught them with their pants down, Dave. They were caught.
He's not talking, is he?
He's talking. You go to my website and listen to that conversation. That's how he's talking. I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to interpret it. I'll leave it at that.
You have to interpret it to get the meaning out of it that we're extrapolating. That's what I'm going to say.
I've already done that. So yeah. People listen to it. And you, I had a guy last night at the meeting. He's a very interesting individual who came to me. And many of the people had heard the audio, heard the tape, the YouTube of Corey Hona. It's called, and the title of the thing is called Heroic Decision, who came to me and he said, you know, I listened to it the first time and I didn't quite understand it, so I listened to it the second time, and then I started to realize there's something there. And I was kind of cracking up. And then he said, I listened to it for the third time, and he says, I could not believe what I was listening to. So you have to listen to it a few times. You're going to be hopping mad. But Corey Hona, as the sheriff, does an absolutely professional job of explaining it. That's all I can say. But once you hear it again and again, you realize what he's saying. Like, hello, wake up. It's one of these kind of gifts you have to have. You know what I'm saying? You just have to be able to have an open mind and listen to what he's saying and read between the lines, it is so obvious these people were going to do evil. And he recognized it. I can tell you, I was there in the room and I watched him and go through this explanation. He got it. He totally saw evil and he stopped evil. He knew what to do. When it came down to it, he put his foot down. This is evil. We're stopping it now. And that's what blew their trip. That's what blew it. I'm telling you, this guy is more of a hero than we realize. But this is what stopped these people from not just having 9/11, but throwing everything the Pope's way for self-destruction and into the encyclical world of the dystopia that would have been created from this. This is well beyond 9/11, Dave. This is well beyond 9/11.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm in the midst of writing an article right now. And it's triggered by people asking me this question. Dave, what do you think will be the ultimate false flag that will cause the deep state to actually come out in the open and take over, and the premise and the pretense of the constitutional republic will be gone? And I go through, and I'm working on this rough draft, but I talk about EMP, and I talk about cyber attack on the grid and straight economic meltdown. But my number one candidate for the takedown of this country and the emergence of a deep state dictatorship is the breaking of the Oroville Dam because of its far-reaching complications. Let's talk about that for a minute. Let's take a couple minutes and talk about when the dam breaks. We've talked about the death. We've talked about the destruction of the food. But let's get into some other implications as well, too, with regard to retail, economic impacts, and so forth.
The economy would be destroyed in days. American economy. This would be the vortex for destruction of the United States of America. Absolutely. I mean, and we mentioned this, I think, way back in when this whole thing was starting to go on, about, we were focused at the time on the inundation of the area. If the dam was to go, what would be inundated? And by the way, that's still a top secret, that inundation map that we posted and put up on our website. The Department of Water Resources does not want us to have it out there. Oh, really? I mean, I guess the kill zone. They don't want the kill zone to be seen. But the north, south, and the east, west from California, first of all, Interstate 80 east from San Francisco, basically west, would be shut down. North and south, Interstate 5 would be shut down. You would have only two roads, literally two-lane roads at a time, Highway 36 and Highway 70, that would go up and over the Sierras. That's it. That's it. The tracks would be gone. Well, of course, up Highway 70, there's a railroad track. There's railroad. That's the lower altitude of the railroad that would come in east and west over the Sierras. But it's very difficult terrain for trains. I mean, it's very, very difficult. A lot of very high elevations and curves and rock slides and stuff. So,
let me interject this at this point. So you're saying, what is it, 25% of the retail comes out of California for the rest of the nation?
Right, right.
And then you've got, what percentage of the agriculture are you, do you know that number?
I would say 60 to 70% of the agriculture of the America.
So you're talking about a famine in this country of monumental proportions.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, here's what I've been told, and Vance
this
Davis...
This would be it. The Oroville Dam would be it.
Exactly. This is why I chose it as number one. Vance Davis, formerly of the NSA, who ran afoul with H.W. Bush, and he's out in the open. This isn't an unnamed source, folks. He has said these things in broadcasts we've done together. But Vance has basically said that the preparation for the destruction of the United States is multi-generational.
Right.
And what's interesting about that is this is what you're confirming right now. And not only that, Golitsyn and all these other Russian defectors that came to America and defected said that the Russian plan to bring down the United States was multi-generational, and they had help on the inside.
Right. Right, I'm familiar with that.
It's all coming together.
Right.
Jerry Brown is the focal point, isn't he?
Yes, he is. He is the Pope's man, because Jerry Brown, the Jesuit, the good Jesuit that he is, and the evidence is so obvious. You know, when Donald Trump went to Rome, the gift that the Pope gave Donald Trump was the encyclical that he wrote, written by an atheist, which, you know, basically says there's no more God, there's no more Christ, there's just Mother Gaia, Earth worship. And Jerry Brown was the first to tout the fact that it would be the Pope that's going to win over Donald Trump. And then 2 days later, Trump said, nein, niet, nada, no to, you know, the Paris Accord. And then Jerry Brown gets all butthurt. He's instantly invited to China for a climate change conference, which I find amazing. He gets on a plane, and now he's over in China. He gathers up his Pope's encyclical and runs off to China with the hopes of reinventing climate change. But it goes deeper than that with Jerry Brown. Jerry Brown is in the process of developing treaties with other countries for California. Now, this is a violation of the Logan Act.
Well, he set up an embassy in Moscow in anticipation of CalExit coming to fruition.
Well, that was, in all fairness to Jerry, that was not him. That was his surrogates with George Soros.
Okay, but there, Soros was part of the CalExit movement.
Absolutely.
So, right. And so I say it's still Jerry Brown's game.
Well, that's that. Okay, you're exactly right. It's I call him El Presidente because he has had the attitude for a number of years now to convert California into its own nation. And he's worked with the Castro brothers. He's worked with what the guy's name down in Mexico is. They're all Jesuits to form these treaties, these energy treaties, and actually. And that has, of course, caught the attention of someone called Jeff Sessions.
What's going on there?
Well, you know, from what I understand, and all I can really talk about or verify is that it's before him. Now, I call Jeff Sessions, well, I don't call him, but I call his representatives the proctologists. And proctologists who have arrived in the state capital of California, thank God. Because, you know, they're the proctologists with the FBI badges. And they're going to be talking to all these little good communists within the state of California, like Kevin De Leon and Alex Padilla, Javier Becerra. They're all related to a RASA, which is a total communist organization. They're all part of the Senate. They're all part of the Assembly. They're all part of, you know, the state government. And which is what Jerry Brown has done. He's brought in all of his little Catholic, I shouldn't say the Catholics so much, I should say La Raza Jesuit buddies to infiltrate the governmental system. And they're doing it. And, you know, the thing is, Jerry Brown, like I've told people, Jerry Brown, and the one thing that's different about Jerry Brown, about every other politician, Jerry Brown answers to the Pope first, then to the Constitution second. As you know, we had this discussion about Catholicism and Protestantism with Nixon over Kennedy. And Kennedy vowed that he would support the Constitution first over the Pope. Remember that?
Absolutely.
And he paid for that with his life, didn't he? Because he did. He said the Constitution's first. And he was good to his word, but he died for it.
Let me ask you a couple questions here of things you've raised, because we're running short on time. Is there a downstream radiation effect going on because of Lawrence Livermore and the storage of these nukes?
Good question. I don't have the answer yet.
Okay, understood.
Very good question. There are monitoring stations downstream from the Feather River going into the Sacramento River and then out to the Delta and then out to the San Francisco Bay Area. I have not confirmed, and people haven't gotten back to me yet, but they will. It's a matter of time. Because you see what's happening is everybody's just ratting out these people. It's not me. I mean, you can take me out of the equation. It's going to be somebody else who's going to have all this information that's going to come out.
Well, I don't have a lot of the detail that you've been given, but I'm getting some from people just in the area and also right. from other people that manage dams in California.
Oh, yeah, that's the
not
other thing.
Part of this. I'm getting a lot, as you know, I've read some of these emails to you.
Right.
That I have received. And so it's widespread. Here's the 64
million. Well, they're getting
million.
The same effect and the same response from Jerry Brown as what we're getting up here in Oroville.
Well, yeah, particularly up in Klamath, which I've heard from those people as well, too. So this is a stupid question, but it has to be asked because everyone in the audience is thinking it. Do you think there's a time frame for the takedown? And if so, do you have any indicators as to when or what kind of events would precede the takedown?
I can. The only thing I'm really able to comment on is, and I really believe this, the Honey experience, he screwed them up. So now all of a sudden they have to regroup. They're backpedaling. They're backpedaling big time. But they have to regroup if they're going to survive this at all. And Jerry Brown, in typical fashion, and this is the, you know, gee, there's a lot of people who know Jerry Brown in California. This is classic Jerry Brown response, backpedaling response to run off to China as he has done. So we know we have him really rattled right now. And we're not stopping. This is the great thing about we're not stopping. Now, in Southern California, there's a whole bunch of other things happening with various assembly members and senators where people are rising up against them. So clearly, Jerry Brown has been put on notice, and so has the rest of them, and they're not responding well to this at all because, you know, it's the antiseptic thing. When you turn light on it, all of a sudden things start to change.
But
and that's what we're starting to see.
You know what they say about cornered animals, though.
Oh, yeah. Well,
that's when they become more dangerous.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I don't know. Now, again, I'm in the position where I'm going to get news and information about whether trucks are going to come in or not at Oroville Dam. I've gotten no more indicators of that. I have no more knowledge of anything coming in or not.
Let me interject this because, and we're out of time, but I do have an email from someone who's been communicating with me fairly regularly, that he has seen, and he counted them, 36 trucks.
Yeah.
36 trucks. Definitive. And they were trying to be obtuse.
Right.
So that was his take on this. I didn't even know what the significance was until you just mentioned this.
Right.
I thought, 36 trucks, okay, maybe they're bringing sandbags. I mean, I had no idea what this meant until you just said this.
No. And there's two levels of trucks coming in. Trucks going to the high side, trucks going to the low side.
It was to the low side.
Yeah. Well, that's
what he said. And I didn't understand that significance until I've just thought this through. Paul, we're out of time. Tell people how they can follow your work.
Well, agenda21radio.news. So, again, that's the address, agenda21radio.news. And you can email me, paul@agenda21radio.news or paul@a21r.com. Either one of those will get you an email. And, you know, we're on from 6 to 9 on Red State Talk Radio 5 days a week, actually 7 days a week at that time frame. We're live from Monday through Friday, and sometimes we chime in on Sundays. And we're also live.
We're sorry to cut off that last part, but we ran over a little bit. We'll be back in hour number 3 with Mike Adams. Stay tuned.